Ahoy, Vashon, or as the French say, Vachon. Our sapphire in the Salish Sea, just 1.7 nautical miles from the Emerald City of Seattle and 375 feet above the Cascadian subduction zone, the mother of all fault lines. While geographically challenged, we remain a buoyant people, floating blissfully above the percolating CSZ. Welcome to our offshore haven, currently without tax advantages, but expectations are high in this age of the Donald of deregulation. I'm Brian Brown. This is the Brown Briefly, where less is more, more or less, coming to you live from our state-of-the-art studio in downtown Vashon. Strategically situated between Zombies, Vashon's premier fast food restaurant, which has been feeding and eating vegetarians since 2012. On the,
oh, there it goes again. Hang up. Stop.
Doubles.
Of two.
On the other side of the VOV studio is the Island Creamery, where milk comes directly from the cow to the bottle and is utterly delicious.
There we go.
Across the highway. Across the highway from VOV is the Saucy Sisters Pizzeria, Vashon's lobbyist for legalized marinara sauce.
Okay, we got them all. Thank goodness.
Trifecta.
We ran through our sneer drums.
Perfect.
It is Tuesday, the 18th. Straight day that April showers have been coming our way. And we have a little April showers.
Life is not a highway strewn with flowers. Still it holds a goodly share of bliss. When the sun gives way to April showers, here's the point you should never miss. Though April showers may come your way, they bring the flowers that bloom in May.
Oh, Al, that's such a wonderful song. Okay, there you go.
So, and who was that?
Al Jolson.
Al Jolson.
That's wonderful.
That's a signature song.
Oh, my goodness. I should know that.
Yeah, you should.
And now
the
I do.
The other one is less politically correct than that. That's the Mammy song.
That's right. That's right. That's other, his other signature song.
No, Al Jolson.
I conveniently forgot that.
Yeah, right. See, so right. You got to be careful here.
That's right. That's right.
Historical context is important, though.
It's always
there you go.
Important.
There you go.
Well, we're not. You know, we used to describe ourselves as a moist people or a damp people. Now we're saturated.
Totally.
It's been like monsoons since April showers started in January, didn't they?
They did.
October, I think.
October, yeah.
Think about this. If the Mariners hadn't put a dome on Gore-Tex Stadium, formerly Safeco Field, at least four of our home games would have been rained out, and we would be in first place, which we currently are not.
Indeed.
But we are in. We're only, what, 3.5 games back?
We are inching up.
Inching up.
Inching.
Clawing our way back, as
there
I
it
say.
Is.
Yes. With me in the studio today is the Fab Four. We thought it was going to be the Fab Three until you showed up, Michael. I had confidence even to the final seconds.
That's right.
Thank you.
It was the late Michael Shook this morning.
Okay, so the Fab Four consists of engineer, sound engineer Truman O'Brien, poet and pronosticator Gail Kellner.
Good morning.
Michael the Glenn Shook.
I'm silent on that. I guess.
And historian Bruce Hallman, who brought a pair of guests with him, Sharon Bailey and Shane Bouquet. S'il vous plaît.
Merci.
He told me you were a Huguenot from Oz.
That's correct. Yes, very correct, yes.
Now, were you the couple who refused to get off that overbooked United Airlines flight and just sat there while a randomly selected passenger was dragged kicking and screaming out the door by his heels? Welcome to Hunger Games.
Thank you, Brian.
Thank you. And yeah, we weren't getting off this flight. We were coming to Vashon no matter what. Yeah.
No matter what. Good for you.
But with the currency rate as it is, I did think about the 800.
I don't understand why United simply didn't offer the passengers more money. Delta raised the bump max to $10,000.
Wow.
So I was thinking, why not book random flights on Delta and just pray to get bumped? Just one bump and you're ahead of the U.S. minimum wage for 1 year.
That's right.
There's a problem with your theory, though, Brian.
Yeah.
Is that you know that there's going to be somebody that's going to come in there for, hey, $30, I'll take it, you know?
$8,999 and I'll do it.
That's exactly, that's exactly it. So,
yeah. What Donald would call the free market kicking
that's right,
in.
Kick it in.
So Sharon and Shane, now that you're here and before your visas run out, give us some first impressions of Sanctuary Island. Where we want to also not make you feel too comfortable because we are in range of North Korea's trans-Pacific ballistic missiles, assuming they don't fizzle on the launch pad.
That's right.
So what's your first impressions of our?
Well, we arrived at midnight, so when we first got here we couldn't see a thing, no street lights. And Bruce did say to us, when you come you'll wake up in Vashon Heaven. And when we woke up we were in Vashon Heaven. It is absolutely beautiful.
Oh,
we
my.
Love it. Just yeah. Love it, and we've been out on the water, and we've met some fantastic people here, so...
You can stay. You can definitely stay.
I'd be happy to stay. So
when did you folks arrive? When? Is it...
It was Friday evening at midnight.
Oh, Friday, okay. So you've been here over the weekend. Good.
They were supposed to come in about 10:30, and so they would have gotten back to the island, you know, on the 11:40 ferry in sort of decent time.
Sure.
Well, the flight out of Honolulu was delayed about 2.5 hours.
Oh,
so they
no.
get in here like, you know, 10 minutes after 12, and we're rushing to make the 12:55 ferry.
Oh, right.
So we don't have to wait till the 2:10 ferry.
That's right. That's right.
But we did make it home.
And on our journey to the United States, Brian, we stopped off at Hawaii. And there's no fear of Vashon being hit first by the Koreans. Yeah. The fear campaign in Hawaii is they are going to take the credit for first hit.
I'm sure they are. Yeah.
Wonderful. Listen, before we change topics, I wanted to get the Australian reaction to that cordial telephone call from our president around January when he spoke and extended himself to your prime minister. What was the thinking?
It was good to see our Prime Minister take a bit of a back foot, and he was a little bit shell-shocked, and as the rest of us were in the country, it's like, well, Malcolm had a cop that one, didn't he?
I couldn't believe it. I'm our only ally in Southeast Asia.
And neither could Malcolm.
I'll bet. Oh, my gosh.
If you watch the news over the weekend through the eyes of President Trump, you would have seen thousands of highly paid sign-carrying protesters taking to the streets and cities across the United States, demanding that our commander in tweet, God, you're getting good, release his tax returns so Americans can scrutinize his business ties. In Trump world, there's no such thing as a volunteer protester. In Trump world, the protesters are privatized. I mean, I just couldn't believe that. Here's this massive outpouring across the United States, and he's saying they're all paid. Please.
It's just one thing after another, really. I mean, they just pile up each week. It just blurts out whatever's on his mind. I'm beginning to think that maybe Keith Olbermann wasn't completely over the top when he released some YouTube videos months ago now, just saying the man's unhinged. He doesn't really have the grip on reality that he appears to. He'll say anything. It's just astonishing to me. It's I don't even know what to make. I don't even know what to think anymore.
The only thing I'd say to that is I think his grip on reality, most of us question. I don't think he appears to have a grip on reality, but other than that, I'm with you, Michael.
Hey, This just in on the Brown briefly. In a stunning rebuke of former close political ally, Russian President Vladimir Putin angrily resigned from Donald Trump's 2020 re-election campaign. The abrupt resignation sent shockwaves through the Trump re-election organization, for which Putin has served as chairman. Also stunning news, Dennis Rodman has been named special U.S. envoy to North Korea.
He has ties there.
Yeah, he definitely does.
He does, yeah. Okay, both of these are fake news items, but at least I fess up. before I go further, let me remind our audience that the opinions expressed on the Brown Briefly do not necessarily reflect the views of KVSH or Voice of Vashon. Justin Trudeau, Prime Minister of our enlightened neighbor in the North, proposed a bill that would make Canada the second country in the world to legalize marinara. I mean, marijuana. I've got zoomies on my mind.
Right, exactly, right.
Legalized marijuana. Anyone know the other country where it's legal?
I'm guessing the Netherlands.
They're legal for, yeah, but they're not purely legal. It's for medical and also how much you can consume or sell. So they hedge it.
It's a weird law. Yeah, I was astonished when I was there to find that out. I thought, oh, it's cool, and it is, but there's this gray area that they decided, I guess, just to not touch. So it's technically not legal, as far as I know.
Well, but they have these cafes, right?
Oh yeah.
But as I understand it, do you have to be a citizen to go into those?
I can attest to that.
Okay.
I just went in and looked around.
Yeah, of course.
And inquired.
But you didn't research purposes.
And you didn't breathe in the air, right?
That's right. You didn't inhale, right?
I didn't inhale. Yeah.
You and Clinton. Right.
I don't know if they have a rule about smoking outdoors. I think now in any kind of sporting events or anything, you can't smoke. But I don't think that applies to Canadians. Last year, I remember going to see a doubleheader sitting in the bleachers at Safeco, and you could just get high on the secondhand smoke. It was wonderful. Liberated people.
If I could answer your question, I think it's Portugal, Brian, which is the first country to legalize marijuana.
They're the first, and Uruguay is on the books.
Oh, on the books as well, yes.
Yeah, the whole country.
Yeah. And Colombia right behind them.
I took notice of a news report about the fact that why Portugal did legalize it. And it was to reduce the intake of it by legalizing it, because it took the fun out of it when it was illegal. It took the fun out of it while it was legal compared to being illegal.
Uh-huh. Exactly.
So they thought, what is the fuss about? So they stopped basically smoking.
My father told me when they legalized alcohol in the United States back in the 30s, he said that people who never thought of drinking took it up.
Anything illegal, right?
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah.
Okay. So, Sharon, what's the laws in Australia on marijuana?
It's illegal completely. So I think they are thinking about introducing medical marijuana. Mm-hmm. And I think that should happen soon, but otherwise, no.
No.
So Sharon.
And I don't see it happening in a hurry.
No. So, Sharon, did you ever inhale?
I inhaled.
Peer pressure.
Peer pressure. Sorry. Well, you can say that in this state because it's legal. So.
Oh, whoops.
We'll send a transcript down.
That's right, yeah. Don't be doing that.
Do you think I'll be allowed to go home now?
Yeah.
Drove off a plane.
While the Trumpster's popularity is at an all-time low, he has a hardcore constituency, 46% of the electorate, who are unwavering in their support. Those working-class Americans rely on such crucial necessities as medical insurance and Social Security. Yet they vote against their own economic self-interest. Why is that?
A combination, I think, of ignorance. And I want to make clear that I'm not saying that any of these people are stupid. I mean, that you know, this is obviously a difference there. But I think it's I think it's ignorance and a angry frustration. They want to, you know, take that out on someone. We get edicts. I go back to my work in construction field, and edicts come down from the state or from a federal agency, and all of a sudden, some guy who's making a living building bulkheads along waterways, for example, and now he's got a whole bunch more restrictions that he's got to deal with. Well, environmentally, those restrictions make sense to help our feeder fish, candlefish and smelt and things like that, recover so we can have salmon or orcas or anything else. But to that person and his crew, it's just like, gosh darn it, another law that's stepping on my toes here, and now I got to go look at my books again, and that's going to cost me $3,000 more this, you know, quarter or whatever. And that's what I have heard anyway from people.
I want to clarify one thing, Michael. And you said ignorant, and I think people often interpret ignorant as stupid, and it's not. Ignorant just means you're not educated.
Yeah, absolutely.
About an issue or something.
Yeah, it's
and I
not.
Think it's clear that that's.
And that's an important. That's a really important point. The people I've lived with and worked around all my life are a lot of things. Stupid is not one of them.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Well, let me suggest you turn the question around a little bit, because I don't think they're voting against their self-interest in their minds and in their perceptions. They're voting for something that they see wrong with the nation and with the way we're going.
Right.
And so the kinds of things Michael brought up. So that the fact that some of these things will be against their own self-interest are not particularly important to them, to many of them. Mm-hmm. They're more concerned about the direction the country's going. They're concerned about overlaying, you know, government responsibilities and regulations and things that are impacting the way they live, the way their jobs are developing, the way the economy's going. And so I think when we ask, you know, why they vote against their self-interest, I think we're really coming at it from the wrong direction. I think we should ask why they vote. What are they voting for? And they're voting for an anti-establishmentarian, sort of populist, let's change the way things are because things aren't working very well. And that when you change that perspective, all of a sudden you see these folks aren't ignorant. You know, they're certainly not stupid, but they're voting for a country that they want to see in a way they want to see it, rather than the way that others want to see
it. Yeah, it's
an interesting perspective there.
Yeah.
I think it's important to remember that Hillary Clinton did win the popular vote by quite a large margin. I think we're at over 3 million at this point.
Uh-huh.
So I think that's something. This isn't everybody in the country. And had we had a regular election, we wouldn't be here talking about it, and he wouldn't be in the White House, meaning if the popular vote won the day. And I think the other thing that happens is that people, if they're uneducated very deeply about a topic, they're very susceptible to sound bites and small bits of information unconnected to the consequences of decisions. So I think that is the other piece that why people can end up seemingly voting against their self-interest. I think we have a lot of single issue voters in this country, and I was at a wedding my own son's last week and had the opportunity to mingle with lots of family, and everyone has a large family knows there's people out there with that you're related to that don't necessarily see things the same way. And it was very interesting because these are people I love and respect, and yet could see how they were holding it, even though I might see it differently.
But in part, you go back to James Carville's, you know, advice to Clinton in 92, it's the economy, stupid.
Yeah,
you know, right. Just sort of like bashing Clinton on the head. You know, it's not about social programs. It's not about defense. It's not about this. It's not about that. It's about the way people are living their everyday lives and what they have access to economic opportunities. And when you strip away a lot of the other things, that becomes a core issue for millions and millions of Americans.
Mm-hmm. There's a play right now on Broadway that actually premiered down in Ashland, Oregon. It's called Sweat, and it has to do with the Rust Belt and the closing of the factories and the closing of the industry and the effect that has upon the population.
Yeah.
And it is devastating. And those folks are really hurting. And so that economic impact is what's driving that particular vote, I think.
And that's where you see the spreading and the diminishment of the middle class having such a large effect. Yeah. You know, you have people living at the poverty line, below the poverty line, even what we call a middle class income, which I think is calculated to be about $50,000 a year for a family of four, is an unreasonable thing to live on in many places. Right. I'm really curious to hear from Shane and Sharon what Australians think looking at what's happened here with this election.
Oh, well, Dale, it's sort of our interesting perspective come from it when the by-election start, and this is a frustrating thing for many Australians, is why do we have to listen to your by-elections and lead up for candidacies to be elected months and months from the general election?
Yeah, we get about a good 18 months of the pre-election, or however long it seems to go for in Australia. Yeah, we get more of that than our own.
You hear more about our elections than your own. How long do your elections last, roughly?
What do you think?
Election will be called, and there's a minimum of 6 weeks between election being called, and then both parties go into campaign mode. So campaign goes for six weeks.
Oh my gosh!
It's compulsory to vote in Australia. So there's just the day arrives, you vote, get a sausage at the sausage sizzle, and just sit down and watch the election result that evening. Wake up the next morning and go, oh well. Yes.
I'm amazed that, in a country that doesn't have a long attention span, we run these things for 3 years waiting out there. Getting back, there are some hot button issues that are very real to people. One is guns and the other is abortion. And there is a firm belief there. So it's not just confusion on the part, I don't think. A thoughtful essay on perceptions and partisanship. Syndicated columnist Nicholas Kristof proposed junior year abroad programs that send liberals to Kansas and conservatives to Massachusetts. Now, here's an idea that has merit. And the problem, it seems to me, is that how do you get a liberal from Massachusetts to spend a semester in Kansas? And conversely, how do you get someone from Kansas to transfer to Massachusetts? And the follow-up question, what do you do when you get them there?
You actually send them all to Australia.
I was just going to say.
and skip the middle part.
And put them in your class, right?
That's right.
There you go.
You get to see the world very differently.
But if you're serious about achieving social progress and a progressive agenda, it seems to me winning over voters in flyover country is essential. So how do you do that? How do you begin to...
You know, Bruce, I think Bruce really, I mean, he was having fun with that. But truly, you know, I think you're right, Bruce. I think that if we get our young folks out into the world, they're going to have a way different worldview than if they just stay in their own little niche in their own little neighborhood. You know, who was it? I think it was this group that was talking about the necessity of the potential of required service. What's the word I was looking for?
Secret service.
No.
National service.
National service, yeah. You know, like there are a lot of countries that have a requirement that you have, when you graduate from high school, you have to give a year to your country, you know, doing something, whatever it is, or 2 years or whatever the number is. Well, I think that's a great idea.
Yeah, I agree with
totally
you.
Totally on board with that.
Yeah. I agree. But I think domestically, how do you change a fundamentalist thinking Oklahoman, and how do you change a liberal from Massachusetts in their perception and thinking?
I certainly think the $10,000 reward might do something for that. Talk to Delta about that. Yeah. But we've talked in the past about how the future voted. Some of you have seen some of the data on that, and all but five states would have taken their electoral votes and gone blue if you looked at the voters between 18 and 25, I believe it was. So one of the ones that wouldn't, I think, was Kansas, still stayed red. But again, I think that the future is light if we live through all of this. If our society is able to go forward, I think that the natural progression will be towards more progressive agenda. We're behind the ball.
And part of it is I mean, we've polarized all these issues, you know, guns, abortion, the economy, immigration, and they're not bipolar issues. I mean, exactly. They're not polarized issues. Right. They're national issues. They're issues that we need to come together as a nation in conversations and come up with compromises that work. And right now we're in a political system that's not particularly willing to compromise from either end. And I think that's the difficulty that we have to penetrate in a political system to get back to the point where compromise was what politics was all about.
These things run in cycles, don't they? I mean, and maybe I'm not saying just sit on our hands and wait it out, but if people of good faith on both sides are working towards a more effective way of governing and really pulling, it seems like after a bit of time that would start to have an effect. Maybe I have too much faith in people. I don't know, but
again, I think it has to do with the conversation. I mean, if you don't, and it's what you're talking about, Brian. If you don't get folks with different ideas talking to each other, I mean, if you're just talking to yourself, you know, or talking to your friends that think exactly like you do, that's not going to do you any good. You've got to get out there and mix with the folks. Yeah.
Since we have folks here to mix with, I wanted to hear from Shane and Sharon. What is the political system? Do you have such a bipartisan system, basically like we have, where it's this or that, or do you have a more complicated political system?
We have a this or that. Yeah, we have Liberal or Labor, really, that we vote for. They can vote themselves out. So, you know, we've thrown out a few prime ministers over the last few years. So we have that option if we're not happy, if their own party isn't happy. So, yeah.
But your prime minister is the head of the party, though, right? Isn't that? Yeah. Right. So it's a little different.
We vote for the party and not the leader.
Exactly.
So the party decides who the leader is, right, and we vote for their representatives in the election.
Right.
Now, at the moment, both our what you can call your conservative and Labor movement parties are identical in a sort of wanting to be in power continuously. So you'll get a Liberal Party voter, which will be disorientated by the Liberals because they think they're far too left, and us Labor voters are always wondering why the Liberals are complaining because we think our party is the best Liberal Party that the Liberal Party's ever had. So there's a form of breakaway members from each party were becoming independent at the moment, and they're becoming elected in their seats, and they are throwing a wobbly into the major parties' direction of passing legislation by denying it or crossing the floor and joining it. So nothing's really happening in a sense, which frustrates the parties, then the opinion polls start making their impact, and then the parties throw out the leader fear of not keeping the customers happy.
Right.
Wow. Before we run out of time, we got less than 2 minutes. I had Googled up that question we had last week about the how long a sitting justice, the Supreme Court
right.
Justice.
Uh-huh.
And apparently it's, you know, it's like every amendment we have, it's not quite clear.
There's no originalist language here that you can go back to and find the absolute truth, right?
Right. What the Constitution says is that the Chief Justice, during a period of good behavior, and what the world does that mean?
Period of good behavior, isn't that right?
No one did it until it was the fourth Chief Justice Marshall who stayed till his death, and then everyone just jumped on it. But I mean, you could get Clarence Thomas apparently doesn't argue cases. Would that be considered bad behavior? Is it impeachable? I have no idea. But that's. It's very questionable, and everyone wraps themselves in the Constitution. Constitution is very obscure.
It wasn't written to be, you know, the absolute. I mean, it is a document that is interpreted, and that's a perfect example. You know, precedent, the example of Marshall, and all of a sudden justices are appointed for life. But nowhere in the Constitution, nowhere in the amendments.